Welcome to Neighborhood Church. To learn more about who we are as a community or to financially support Neighborhood, go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org. Enjoy the message.
All right. I hope you enjoyed your break. Now, today we're talking about, if you didn't pick up on the theme from the music, we're talking about joy and gratitude. But to get to the joy and the gratitude, we have to first talk about pet peeves. Who here has a pet peeve that you want to publicly admit? Right here. Who wants to go first? Zoe, happy birthday. Burping? Like you burping or other people burping? Your burping is fine. Other people's belching disgusts you. Your belching is holy and sacred. I like that, all right? I agree. I'm not a big fan of the burp or spitting, all right? Okay? I have a lot of, just buckle up. I have a ton, all right? Who else has a pet peeve they want to share? Yes? Smacking your gum? Oh, your gum, like chewing gum. I was talking about like your gums. I'm like, well, like, be on this. That would be weird. I agree. Both, okay? All right. Anyone else that has a pet peeve? Do we not have pet peeves once we hit, like, our 20s? No? No? Hunter, do you? Yes? Dirty floors. I have a white floor by accident. All right? So it was all white, and it was on sale. I'm like, we want this one, and I regret it every day. Now, that's why I don't invite you over, Cole, all right? Cole would hate this. Yes? Dog hair and pigeons? Very different than what I heard. Dog ears on pages, yes, all right? He said dog hair and pigeons. I'm like, that's very specific. I like this. Clarity is kindness. All right. You know who loves that? People who love books don't want dog ears. I used to do it, and then people said, you can't do that, and I stopped it because I'm a good human. All right. Not a problem anymore because you live alone. Kitchen cupboards left open. All right. I learned that never happened until I had people who are over 18 living in my house, and it turned in there. They wake up at 2, and they leave everything open. All right. Okay, anyone else have a pet peeve that you want to share? This is a good grievance, right? Get it out. Empty container. You guys are, this is all therapy. You guys are like, yes. It's like rage therapy. Yes, I hate it. Okay, I agree. I hate it. I hate empty ice cream containers in the freezer is what I hate. Kathy? Leaving three squares of toilet paper. So not replacing it. I wonder who you'd be talking about. Okay, Rhea, yes. Shoes in front of the door when you walk in. Oh, so you can't open the door. You have to touch other people's shoes. Yeah, gross. No, thank you. All right. Anyone else need to get this out in public as a way of confessing? No, Paul. So when you're telling your partner, you should say it. You should say it, right? It's always a great sign. My pet peeve is my wife trying to get me to say things in church. That's it. Okay, mine. I have a lot, right? But one of them is wet pockets. Wet pockets, yep. Don't like wet pockets, right? If you ever played, you're going to, oh, good for you, Chris. I play golf. I'm super good. But when it rains and I have to put my hand in my pocket to get my ball marker out, I know you have a lot of sympathy for me, and I can't. You guys ever tried putting your hand into wet pockets and you're trying to get like a dollar bill, or a worst thing in the world is a dime, and you're like trying and you're pulling the whole pocket and things are falling out, right? I hate that. That is what we're talking about this whole time, and this is what the Psalms is talking, is that life is complicated, life is hard. And there's a practice that can yes, Wally, it's true. And there's a practice that can recenter us, and that is gratitude. And in my life, especially, to be honest, recently, gratitude is not always easy to come by, right? And it feels like a wet pocket. It's like, I know the dime is in there, and I know if I pull it out, it's going to be of some value, right? It's going to be good. But it's so much work. And at times, life can feel like cargo pants or cargo shorts, sorry. Right? In my late 20s, I wore cargo shorts all the time, and I, Fester, he's pumping, he's like, yeah, cargo shorts, right? They're great if you are, like, traveling in the safari, right? And you have to, like, put snakes or something in there, right? Or you're trying to sneak food and drinks into the theater for, like, your kid's birthday party, all right? That's what cargo shorts are for. And then at times, the pocket can feel like women's jeans, which they just stitch the appearance of a pocket on it. And there is no pocket. It's just a lie, right? Right? It's a lie. It's what? That's your pet peeve, fake pockets. Exactly, all right? So with gratitude at times can feel like it's a fake pocket. You're never going to access it, right? You can pretend it. You're like, none of this is real, right? And other times life is like the cargo bike. It's easy to and access that gratitude, right? Like joy and gratitude, so easy to, like, I'm a really happy person when, like, the floors aren't dirty, right? It's like joy is everywhere because the floor is clean, right? Or when you were in a good spot with your partner, right? Or you're walking and, like, it's sunny out and you don't have a sunburn, but you just realize how tan you are. You're like, man, you walk by a mirror and you're like, I look good. Joy is really easy then, right? But when you feel lonely or you look in the mirror and we kind of joke about it, like, look at that person, but what you feel is dread inside, right? Or, like, things between your partner are not, like, horrible, but they're not great. And when you think about it, you're like, it's actually not been great for, like, a while. What does that mean? And all that stuff where gratitude then feels like the dime in the wet pocket. It's like, I know it's in there, but it takes a lot of work to get it out. And is it worth it to get it out? Yeah, maybe. Times, yes. But what I love about the Psalms is it speaks about real life issues in very different ways, right? We don't talk about shepherds and sheep a whole lot, but today we are. You're welcome, London, all right? But it speaks about rage, and it speaks about rest. It speaks about God is this amazing, amazing human or amazing thing, this reality. And like a couple verses later, it's like, where are you? Do you even exist? It goes from the high highs to low lows and everything in between because it's chaotic. The Bible is chaotic. It like speaks to one thing. It speaks to other. It contradicts each other. And I love it because so do we. It's the most human thing. It's one of the things I love about thinking about love or reality or God. And especially the sacred Bible, the sacred literatures, it just speaks of the human experience, which to me is good and beautiful and sacred. I love it. And today we're talking about wet pockets and gratitude and joy. And they, like the author of this psalm starts out with like a banger. And it's just like they're riding that high, right? And I love it. And it can give us some hope. And maybe for those of you here today, you feel like, oh gosh, I don't want to ruin one of my favorite parts of my message, but you're feeling like you have some joy, but you feel like you have to manufacture it, right? That's like showing up to work, right? And you're like, this is so great. And you're like, I don't mean anything I'm saying right now, all right? I'm faking to make it. Or maybe you feel that about yourself. Maybe you feel about your relationship. Maybe you feel that about God. Maybe you, wherever you're at in this gratitude thing, my goal is that you can walk away feeling for just a brief moment that you got the dime out of the pocket. So we're reading out of Psalm 100. My wonderful assistant and technician, Hunter, is going to, already did it. Believe in your dreams. All right. Psalm 100. Shout for joy to the Lord, all the earth. Worship the Lord with gladness and come before them with joyful songs. Know that the Lord is God. It is they who made us, and we are theirs. We are their people, the sheep of their pasture. Enter their gates with thanksgiving and their courts with praise and give thanks to them and praise their name. For the Lord is good and their love endures forever. Their faithfulness continues through all generations. So where this starts is this idea of shouting for joy all of creation. And I kind of like this because when I was when I believed I was more extroverted than I really was, than I really am, I would love to be like the life of the party. I really did. I wanted to be funny. I wanted to be loud. And there's a lot of people, maybe Barney might be one of those people. Remember, former version of Chris, right? Was like, wow, youth pastor is, hey, everybody. And now I'm just like middle-aged Chris, like, hey, it's really great to see you, right? And that's enough exuberance. Here they start off right away, like, make a joyful noise. Great. But the part of the entire earth is fascinating to me. Because when we want good things, we usually start a place of good things, good fortune, money, looks, acceptance, believability, we always put like a limit to it. So we want good things for me. And that might mean good enough things for you. As long as I get the good things and there's enough left over for you, which also implies there might be not anything else for whatever we believe to be the next tier, the next outer rung, those people. It's always an us versus them. And why? Because it has kept humans alive. Right? It has kept us in existence from like millions of years of having to choose our group, our tribe, our community, our people, our family, our friends, our work, our political party, our theological agreements, the jokes that we choose to laugh at and the ones we don't laugh at, all the things we tolerate, we put into camps because it somehow benefits us, right? And here the psalmist starts by saying, like, everything. Let the entire existence, all of reality, all of the universe, all of energy somehow respond and move and engage with this good and beautiful God, which I love because it speaks again of the benevolence of who this God is. And I need to be reminded, as in the wet pocket kind of thing, of just trusting and believing, could there be a God that's this good? I had a friend. His name is Nicholas Hansen, one of my best buddies. And I don't know, several years ago I was in a tough spot. And Nick is a phone talker. If you have phone talker friends, right, there's like texting friends that if you called, they're like, what's the emergency? Why did you dial, right? And then I have calling friends. I have two of them, and Nick is one of them. He loves to call. And I called him, and I'm like, I'm not doing really good. This is really hard. This is like, it was something about conflict. I don't remember what it was. And he just said, Chris, you just got to vibrate higher. And if you know Nick Hansen, Nick has like beautiful blonde hair, and he's got this like surfer dude like eyes, like, hey man, and beautiful, brilliant blue eyes. And he's just, you can hear him just like, Chris, you just gotta vibrate higher, right? I love them making fun of a person only like three of you know, but like, hey, and I've never forgot it. This idea of that there's vibrations, there's energy in all the universe, not just the humans that I love. Right? It's not like the people I disagree with or I vote differently than or I believe differently than that I want them to vibrate lower, right? It's like all this energy in the world is inviting us to participate with it. So the psalmist is saying, make a joyful noise, all the earth, is this like radical inclusivity that everything belongs. And if everything belongs, then maybe we are more connected to one another, the people we love, the people we tolerate, the earth. Maybe we're more connected than we believe. In a way of gratitude, this can center us of saying, I am not unique. I'm not maybe the most special, except you, because it was your birthday yesterday, Zoe. Right? You are special, right? Everyone else, right? But it, for me, the gratitude is like, I am one part of this beautiful mess we call the universe. And so I can find some gratitude. I can find a start of saying, I belong to something larger than myself. And then it goes, oh, this is so good. Know, in verse 3, know that the Lord is good. How do you know things are good? Right? If you're like me, is anyone here a Rotten Tomatoes Bobo? Meaning you go to the website Rotten Tomatoes before you watch any movie? Yes. Right? Me too. I live and die by it because I hate spending money to go to bad movies. I hate watching bad movies, unless I want to watch it to mock a friend of mine. Then I love it, right? Then I can do that all day long, right? And that's a way of knowing if the movie's going to be good, but I'm trusting someone else's experience. The only way I can really know if the movie's good is by actually watching it, experiencing it, processing it, being in relation. The only way we can know the goodness of God is we have to be in some relational proximity to what we believe God is, right? And who she is. For example, she's not here. I was going to point to my wife. Would have been you, right? I met my wife when I was 13 years old, and I've told the story a trillion times, but I went to this youth group at a church that had a tabernacle name in it, and I went, you know, it tells you how desperate I was, all right? Because someone told me that Christian girls will talk to me, all right? Like, Christian girls will talk to you. I'm like, well, that's awesome. And I show up, I walk in, and there is this girl there, and her name's Nikki, and she has a Phoenix Suns starter jacket, right? If you guys know that, and bright red lipstick, and this beautiful hair, and she had an energy and a spirit and a laughter and a playfulness about her that it just instantly was like a magnet, and I knew, I didn't have the words, and I knew I loved her. I wanted to be her best friend. I wanted to know everything about her. That was 33 years ago, right? That's a long enough time. And I have very bad news. Nikki's changed since she was 13 years old. I know. I know. She lost the starter jacket, all right? She wears, like, more neutral lipstick, all right? Still has the playfulness, but Nikki's changed. And the only way for me to know Nikki is I have to be in relation with her to recognize what is changing. And you know what? I love Nikki more now than I did when I was 13. But that takes work because I've changed. And Nikki changes. And the people around us change. And our kids change. And our finances change. Our stress change. Our jobs change. Things are continually evolving and shifting and transforming. And the only way for me to stay in relationship to really know my wife is I have to be in that relationship. One of the things I say this at most weddings I do. At the end of it, I say, hey, why don't we speak blessing on the couple instead of speaking curses? Because we think it's funny at weddings to say, oh, the old ball and chain, you're doing time, lock them up, throw away the key, heart, heart, heart. It's just cursing. It's just cursing. Instead, I'm like, why don't we say, like, hey, congratulations. Hey, it gets better. This is good. It gets better. It's hard, right? Like, that's maybe a little bit of a curse, but speak blessing. Why am I telling you that story? I totally forgot. Oh, to know things, right? Is a joke that we say is, honey, I told you I loved you on our wedding day, and if anything changes, I'll let you know, right? And that's like the joke of like, oh, yeah. And I'm like, that's just toxic because there's maybe you've been there. Maybe you've been in a relationship with a friend, family member, or your partner where you felt that was true, and maybe you had to work through it, or maybe you had to find different ways of existing and relating to one another, right? Instead of, also, this is how people think about God. That's where I wanted to land. Think they had an experience with God, or their parents handed them something about God, or a youth pastor, or a teacher, or someone important to them, and it's been 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years later, and still the way that they know God is something from decades ago. Instead of, you've changed. Maybe God changed? I don't know. Like, I do? Process theology informed Chris thinks that God is evolving and changing. But if you feel like God never changes, I'm with you. Because if God never changes, we change. And that means God is infinitely knowable and infinitely unknowable. We arrive at the same point. If you believe God changes or doesn't change, we are still discovering new things about God. And the only way to discover new things about God is to be in relation. Then how do you know God? The psalmist is saying we should know God. Let the whole earth rejoice, all of creation, and we want to know God. How do you know God? For me, the way I know God is like through knowing my wife and having to give love and patience and to receive the love and infinitely more patience from her to me. It's me going out to Jay Cook, and I have like 5 favorite cedar trees. I do. I saw them yesterday, and I hugged them all. Yesterday was a hard day. I hugged them and cried. I'm like, I'm going to be okay talking to trees. That's how I experience God, sitting by the water and listening to the birds. Maybe it's reading a good book. Maybe it's playing with your favorite animal. Maybe it's playing golf. Maybe it's going for a run. Like, to know and to love God is to engage with the people and the energy and all of creation. God has to, the idea of knowing God has to move beyond just what we think about God. It's how we experience God. And she is wonderful, and she is wild, and she is everywhere. Oh, I love that. Then it goes on. And it said, is it God who made us, and we are theirs? We are their people and the sheep of their pasture. Now, I haven't thought about this in this way for maybe ever. I remember being a teenager, and the pastor of this church with the word tabernacle in it was talking about being a shepherd and sheep. And I've heard, and maybe you've heard these messages, and they brought like a staff, and they held it up. Right? And they talked about how the pastor is the shepherd of the church and how God is the shepherd of all of us. And then they told us how dumb the sheep are and right, how stupid the sheep are and how we have to be so thankful that the shepherd knows us and is strong and can fend off bad things. And I remember sitting there thinking, like, I think this is just a polite way of calling me dumb, all right? I think he's like telling us that we are so thankful and lucky to have this shepherd. And being a young man at the time, it didn't bother me. Because in a misogynistic, patriarchal world, any kind of strength is like, yeah, I get that someday. Right? It's a way of saying this is holy and sacred to lead with force. And we just have to blindly trust that the shepherd knows what they're doing. And it's like, fall into compliance. Yes. Is that for me? A little bit. Is that for women? 1,000 times more. In those spaces? Is that for vulnerable people? 1,000%. Anyone who doesn't look or act or behave like us, this is strong, and you better be thankful for the strong people. And if that is the paradigm that you're in, you can see this verse and saying, God is our shepherd, we are the sheep, we should just be thankful, us dumb Christians, us dumb humans, trusting in this good God. And this feminist theologian, I wrote down, Dr. Sophia Reyes, says, that metaphor doesn't work for all people. If it doesn't work for all people, then it doesn't work. Right? That's like theology 101. If theology benefits you, if you're the hero and you win over and over and over again, that is a theology of you. That is a God of you. That's an egocentric God. And what she argues is, what if we reimagine this metaphor? And anytime I hear the word reimagine or rethink when it comes to the Bible and God, I'm like, I already like this. And what she argues is saying, what if instead of this domineering, like Mel Gibson ripped God, right? That says, you're so lucky for me. What if instead it's this really benevolent, kind shepherd, and the pasture is this infinitely wide space of where you have freedom to roam and go and be exactly who you are. And the shepherd knows you and knows the sheep and knows the vulnerabilities, knows the threats, and knows the opportunities, and out of love and kindness is engaging with you instead of out of force and dominance, and like, you better just be thankful for me. And the one thing that she said is that what if like the pasture is so open that other sheep from other flocks can come in, and that's not a threat? And what if that sheep or a group of these sheep go off into another place, another shepherd, another place? And what if it's just this wide open, benevolent place where the real you gets to flourish? I love that idea of a God that knows me, that knows us, knows the threats and vulnerabilities, and instead out of force and anger, but instead out of love and kindness and compassion is engaging us. That's a God I can get behind. Now, in that way of thinking of all the earth, of knowing God, of a kind shepherd, then even in like the wet pocket, hard, difficult times, the gratitude is a little bit easier for me to access instead of thinking, I have to be beautiful, I have to be perfect, I have to be what other people tell me is good, then I can be happy. Then I can be good. Because what this psalmist is talking about over and over again is this joy, shout, process, activate, engage, experience, embody this joy. But like, joy that is authentic, you can't manufacture, right? Have you ever tried manufacturing joy at your birthday party? You ever tried manufacturing joy at like a retirement party, right? And you're like, I am so glad you're leaving. Yay! It doesn't work for too long. I remember us charismatic Pentecostals are going to love this story. I remember going to Bible camp. And I love this. Before we'd leave, parents and the adults of the church would gather around before we got on the bus, and they'd pray for us. And they would, it was really kind. I haven't thought about it forever, and it felt very sweet to me. I have a lot of toxic stuff from that church, but the community and interest of the betterment of these teens was undeniable, and I take that with me, right? The whole idea you can leave things behind and take the things with you. But I remember, I won't say their name, I remember this man saying, bring home the fire with you, Chris. And he meant it probably the most kind, most benevolent way. And what I took it was pressure. I now am responsible for whatever I experience at camp, I have to bring back with me. And it felt good, felt like a challenge, but it's what I thought about. And at camp, people are, and this is foreign to you, we can talk about it later, but people are like speaking in tongues. We did this thing called, I've talked about before, the Holy Spirit car wash, where you walk through and all these strangers touch you and yell things at you that are supposed to be encouraging, right? And then we did worship music for, I don't know, an hour in the morning and an hour at night and a little bit more after the service. And it was fun, it was live, and people, we jump up and down, and it felt authentic. And then we'd go back to church that Sunday, and I felt, we have to bring this back. And so a group of us, teenagers, during, I think we even did the music, and we'd play it, and we're like manufacturing, we're jumping up and down, we're trying to replicate the things we had at camp. And you could tell the adults are like, nah, this is never going to happen. And we're like, we agree with you, but we're going to pretend anyways, right? And when I thought about this idea of joy, they're not talking about like fake it till you make it. The joy is not tied to a theology. The joy is not tied to a temple. It's not tied to a building. It's not tied to a space. The joy this the psalmist is talking about is you. You showing up as your fullest self. You showing up as your real self. Real self is complicated, angry, sad, happy, joyful, wet pocket, cargo shorts, fake pockets, everything in between. When you can be your fullest self, that is powerful and that is resistance. Last week we talked about singing as protest. You moving as your fullest self, you moving even just believing in yourself is protest. It's resistance. Because as the world and work and relationships and grief and everything is trying to define and tell you who you are, when you say, yeah, go for it. I'm showing up to this party. I'm showing up to this retirement party. I'm showing up to church. I'm showing up to going to bed. I'm showing up wherever it is as my fullest self. And believing it is resistance. It is power that no one else can take from you. So where I end is this. I don't even have to look at it. I know it. It ends with, maybe I should read it. It says, for the Lord is good and their love endures forever. Their faithfulness continues through all generations. This idea of all generations, I learned from this progressive rabbi who gave me a book, and the title of the book is called Jew. And I looked at the title, I'm like, okay, this is a great title. I don't know if I can, like, say this, all right? And he said, yeah, I get that. He goes, instead of the idea of Jew being a noun, he goes, we believe it's also a verb. To Jew means that you are moving and embodying all the things of generations, 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 the suffering, the exile, the joy, the celebration. All of it is coming with me, and I get to choose if I embody or not, and I'm passing it on to the next generation. And then he talked on how the idea of that that the Jewish people are always in exile, always believing, waiting to the place of where they arrive. And I love that concept. Instead of it being this, and it is, it's equally horrible and evil and all that, but a way of reimagining and embracing, saying, but we are going to continue to move on until we find this place, until we find shalom, until we find the home. Oh, I love that. So the idea of that it's going on to all generations is this conscious embodiment of gratitude. It's not just for me. What you discover, what you learn, what you embody, what you grieve, what you work through, what you choose just to tolerate for a little bit longer, all of it is not just for you, but it's meant to be shared and passed on and experienced to the people around you for all generations, which I love. Because when I'm practicing gratitude, it's not just I have to survive. And that is an easy place to fall into. I just have to survive another day. It's also then thinking about how do I help the other people get on my shoulders so they can see a little bit more than me, and then they continue on. So I'm going to pray. And as I pray, if you're in a spot of where gratitude and joy is really accessible, or it feels gratitude and joy feels a little more like the wet pocket, as I pray, I'm going to invite you to connect with however you connect with God and find maybe the inspiration or the hope, maybe in for a little bit. Let's pray. So God, thank you for the sound of checkers. Thank you for the sound of little people. Thank you for the sun. Thank you for hot enough coffee. Thank you for love when it's easy and when it's complicated and when it's hard, because it's still love. So I pray for my friends here today who feel gratitude and joy is a faded memory. I pray for my friends who feel like joy and gratitude are very present. And all of us in between those two extremes, God, we say yes and amen. Let it be so. Then in a breath or a moment or for days, we can experience thankfulness. And also, God, may we have permission that joy and gratitude can look wildly different than the person next to us. And that pressure to feel joy is smiling, joy is bubbly, is not true for everyone. So you give us that wisdom and the permission to process how we process and arrive where we arrive, and that's enough for today. God, will you be in our breath, be in our steps, be in our silence, and be in our laughter. And for a moment, God, can we maybe not shout, but maybe even whisper prayers of joy and gratitude. And we love you. Amen. So, thank you for being in this space with me. If you'd like to pray or process, I'd love to do that. I'll be around for the next couple, 13, 14 minutes. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.